You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk.
Talking sex.
And of course, it is adult radio. Many of us struggle to find love. We're going to help you out, hopefully, over the next hour by talking about the science of love and what we can do, the love that we need. It's relevant. Sometimes you're in a loveless relationship, but maybe you're also just single and you have been struggling to fall in love and to find a lover. What can we do for you? We've got back in the studio with us, Louisa Niehaus, who is a trauma psychotherapist and a relationship expert. Louisa, hoe gaan dit?
Good.
I'm very presumptuous as well. I never asked you whether you're Afrikaans.
Nee, ek is nie Afrikaans, maar ek kan Afrikaans praat.
Oh,
my
right,
accent's
okay.
Just not that cool.
Okay, because I've been speaking bits of Afrikaans, Louisa. I don't know why I assumed like Niehaus. Niehaus sounds very Afrikaans-ish. Are you anglicized?
I'm anglicized, yes.
I think
with a lot of Latin in there.
Yes. I think we should possibly start off the conversation by you answering a question. I'm a 80s child and I'm very cheesy. I don't know
okay.
if you are
yeah, I'm 80s.
Cheesy as well.
Bananarama.
Yeah, me too. And there's a question, Shame, that Hedaway posed that has not been answered. The question is in this song, and then after the song, we'll get straight into it.
Cool.
Listen to the first line.
Okay.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more. Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more.
I would love him. If you Google his images, he has bedroom eyes.
What is love?
Okay, man, he puts the bar very low, hey?
Well,
like, don't hurt me. As long as you don't hurt me. Surely there's more to love than just not being hurt.
Yeah, but think of all the things he said. I feed you my love. You don't care. What can I do? It's up to you. Do you see how we just give over our power to the other and we expect our partners and our lovers to fill us?
That's true.
That's the primary starting point. We expect others to meet our needs, and that's where it goes skew.
So what should the expectation then be?
Well, mostly what happens is we look for someone who has the predominant character traits of the people who raised us. Okay.
Mm.
So unknowingly, what we do is we try to recreate our childhood. Sorry, childhood stuff.
Comes back to haunt you.
Comes back. And this is so that we can heal old wounds or seek out a love that we are familiar with and
yes.
therefore that we crave. And this familiar love can either be positive or negative. And so what we do is we attempt to recreate the environment of familiarity. And we all have our own unique blueprint of love. And this is the love we perpetually seek to recreate. Unfortunately, though, the psyche makes absolutely no distinction between whether this primary love is good or bad.
You answer a question that immediately popped into my head when you were talking about childhood. Because, and it's so funny, I was actually speaking to my counselor about this the other day. Because the template that you were role modeled as a child may not have been the healthiest.
No.
Do we still seek it out even when we arrive in adulthood sometimes and we think, now that I have a strategy for finding my lover, I definitely do not want to reproduce my childhood.
Yeah, but you know what you're looking for? You're looking for to heal those childhood wounds.
Mm.
So it's unrequited. And every relationship you go into, if you haven't healed those wounds and if you aren't aware of them, you will be looking to force that into your relationship and you will attract those type of people where you can reenact that.
You're scaring me now. Within the first 3 minutes, we've already gone back into childhood. But that is so beautiful and also just inevitable, the connections across time in terms of our lives, right?
Mm.
Because we sometimes think that it's easy to have a grip on the traumas that you had in childhood and you can break certain cycles even.
Mm.
You're not going to be the cheating lover that dad was with mum, for example. You're not going to be this, that, and the other. And we really think it is just a matter of deciding cognitively, I'm going to be Louisa, the best lover ever, despite my childhood and what I saw.
Exactly. But doesn't always work out like that. And you know what? There's a double whammy for same-sex couples in this. Because, for example, in your formative years, if you had experienced abandonment, lack of love. That's one issue to deal with. But gay people have a completely different layer to deal with, and that is societal values and judgments.
That's true.
So it's more nuanced. And what happens is, in gay relationships, one will often find that people are, the gay couples often feel unworthy. And that this is a theme and a trait that goes through gay relationships. They often feel that they will never meet anyone worthy enough to love them.
I want to invite you to call in, share with us your experiences. You've heard Louisa has gone in deep right from the word go, and rightly so. It is fascinating, and I wonder whether you've ever reflected on maybe your failed attempts to find the love of your life in your 20s, 30s, 40s. What have been your strategies? And maybe you've never thought before about patterns of behavior, and this might be a wonderful opportunity to hit the pause button on your failed attempts at finding love and seeing whether there are certain kinds of behavior that keeps popping up. Pathologies that might pop up as well. And we just can't escape the shadows of our past, but we can deal with it. And that's why we've got a trauma psychotherapist here with a unique skill set to talk to us about how to reckon with our past. 011-883-0702. Questions, comments, stories. Questions, comments, stories that you have, your experiences of love, trying to find them, share them with us. And if you are in Cape Town, on 021-446-0567. You know, I've got millions of questions for you. There's questions on Twitter as well. But tell me where you want us to go with this topic before I vomit out all the hundreds of questions I had since you and I first agreed that sometime in future we must talk about this topic.
I would like to let people know how they can overcome these patterns. And the first point is that you have to be self-aware. If you don't know what your dynamic is, it's like a worn familiar groove, and without knowing, you slip into it, and you constantly seek same. And then, even if you are in a healthy marriage, once all, or a healthy relationship, so once all the butterflies have died down, and you're back to that mundanity, and you think, where is the love gone? You have to examine, what are you doing in that relationship? What are your needs? What are your expectations? Remember love experiences that you may have had as a child. Were they positive? Were they negative? I knew someone who loved their grandmother's baking. That baking, nurturing act felt for that person as if they were deeply loved. So it can be something as innocuous as that.
Sure. Darren, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Darren. Thank you so much for calling in today.
Hi. Yes, thank you. It was just a very interesting conversation. I've just finished reading a book called The Velvet Rage by Andy Down. He's an American psychologist. And his book talks all about gay men growing up in a sort of straight male world. And I think what you said just now resonated in terms of, and his whole premise is around the idea of shame, growing up feeling ashamed of kind of who we are, and that then leads to the idea that we don't deserve love.
Yes.
And so we take what we can get, and that often means that we're unhappy. And so there we look, and we keep looking, and we keep looking, and I just feel like, and I mean, it's a very broad generalization, but in the gay community, it tends to be that pattern of finding kind of what you think is, you know, your only worth, and then you realize it isn't. And I suppose I would just recommend to any gay man to read that book, The Velvet Rage. It's very, very enlightening.
Give me the title again, Darren. It sounds really cool.
Velvet Rage.
Velvet Rage. I think I've heard of it before. Yeah, thank you for sharing that with us. What a lovely call. We'll come back to that and shame and deserving in a second. Let's take a second call, Louisa. Morakana, hello.
Hi, Ibi. How are you?
I'm lekker. Can't complain. Lovely, difficult conversation here. I was hoping it's going to be all Dr. Alban and Hathaway, but we're now back in our childhoods. What comes up for you?
Look, mine was never pink and fluffy. My childhood, of course, I grew up as an abused child who actually had an option of, you know, sort of becoming a street kid, but thank God I'm here today. My stepdad abused my mom and me, like physically so. So I think that affected my relationships. I'm 31 years old now, and I'm struggling to, you know, sort of find a lifetime partner.
How has this affected you, Marika?
More, I beg your pardon?
How has this affected you?
A lot.
Like in what way?
I'm so insecure. my stepdad used to abuse me. I had scars all over, you know, my body where people would just tease me when seeing those scars. It was just something else. So I was just never attracted to guys because at some stage there was a head girl of thought. So that sort of, you know, repelled guys away from me. And growing up, having to sort of resuscitate that confidence took me forever. So here I am now wanting to find love, but I find myself insecure. What happens is that, you know, the little mistake your partner makes, I retaliate. I hit where it has.
Okay, so what I would say to you, Marakan, is that it sounds to me also like there's an inherent element of shame around the love that you need, given the experiences that you've had.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, there's an element of control that if you can control your partners and control your environment, that you would feel safe.
So.
Does that feel accurate for you?
It does.
Okay.
It scares me because the anger as well. I just explode. I can't control it. And I tend to say things that I do not mean. Okay. Remember, I grew up, you know, more protecting myself. I'm just overprotective.
Anything
that comes to mind, I say it, and it becomes a weapon of mass destruction. I'm telling you.
So, Marakan, how would it work if you then learned to unleash this anger in another setting, like, for example, if you took up martial arts or you took up running or you did something where you could invest that emotional energy and also be aware of it?
Marakana?
So I'm a part-time fitness instructor with Virgin Active, do you understand? It sort of, you know, revived my confidence, but there's still that little, you know, a hole within me. That's a place that I just keep, you know, going back to. And I don't know how to get rid of that because it worries me.
Marakana, can I ask you a question from the Peanut Gallery? Do you have the opportunity, and it is a privilege because these things are expensive, to ever have gone into counseling where in a structured manner, you could begin to work through some of this stuff so that it doesn't derail your prospects of love and other forms of relationship? Have you ever given that a go at all?
I've never.
I think it could be a good option for you, Marakana.
I've never. I found something that I really love, something that speaks to me, something that listens, which is gym. But I think I need more than just that.
Yeah, because I love gym like you do. I go to weights training 6-8 times a week. But there's something about the guided dialogue and tools with a professional that there's no substitute for. And it's different to having a bottle of wine with your BFF.
Sure.
You know, you don't want to overburden your friends, but also your friends don't have the skill set of a psychotherapist or a counselor. And I'm very aware of the fact that it's privilege because in the public sector, it's not easily available. That's why I'm saying if you have the privilege to be able to afford it, because there's deep work to be done there.
And Marakana, what I will say to you is the fact that you've already identified this and that there is a level of self-awareness means that this can be explored and it can be changed.
Absolutely. 22 minutes after 11.
It's 7:02 and Cape Talk.
Talking sex.
And we're talking today about love, a beautiful, fascinating and difficult conversation. There are many different kinds of love. Shall we talk about them? Because a human being needs all sorts of love. And sometimes, and I suppose the name of this segment doesn't help, we sexualize love. But there's more to love than sex, and the two are not even the same necessarily.
No, exactly. And also, it's quite unfair to expect your significant other to fill and meet all of those needs that a friendship could fill. So, for example, your partner wants boys' night out. You want to go to your book club. You need to go and play soccer. That is just a really important part of our human functioning because we need to express ourselves in different ways outside of our primary relationship.
Yes.
it's really healthy because it puts less pressure on your partner to fulfill all your needs.
From the point of view of, and I don't know what the right language is we must use here, because strategizing sounds so predatory, but strategizing how to potentially find your lover, the love of your life, if you are single and listening to this conversation, does that mean, and this is not to say that you are lowering the bar for what you want in an ideal partner, but that you are cognizant of the fact that the person that will eventually walk into your life accidentally or by design does not need to be the person that gives you all the things you currently get from the environment, from being alone, from your friends, from your colleagues.
Correct. 100% correct. It's very loaded to expect that of the other. But they will have a great number of things that resonate with you and that allow it to spark.
You said earlier that often, if there are certain traumatic childhood experiences we had, then we hope to avoid them. And we frame that very much in terms of painful experiences. And the last call was a harrowing example of that. If you didn't have physical security, if you were physically abused, that's the lens through which you will evaluate any prospective partner as an adult. But there are also some examples on the other side of the coin,
positive traits. For example, yes, I have one. One of the things that are so important for me in a significant relationship and a primary relationship is the theme of solidity. And I seek this out in my friendships. I seek this out in my love relationships. And it stems from the fact that my parents were very solid. And I felt that, especially my father, had my back, that he's an Italian man and he's very feisty. And if anything goes wrong, he would have stepped into the fray and decked anyone who came near me. And for me.
So how does that manifest both in big and small ways?
Well, for me, it means that I don't like fickle people. I like people who I feel will be protective, and I can be protective over them, that would have my back, that I can rely on, that are solid, that are dependable.
Can that also become a shadow?
It could, because
I'm thinking of a really frivolous example, but often the frivolous things can be the reasons why relationships can also break up. Someone accuses you of jumping the queue at Checkers. You say, I didn't. Your partner says, Louisa, no, you did. She's right.
Yeah, how dare you? Why
aren't
you sticking up
for me? You're supposed to stick it up for me, right? Because that's what dad would have done.
Exactly. And then it's not relevant. The other shadow with that is that I could become over-encompassing and very domineering. And I do know that I have a strong personality, so I've got to keep that in check. Yes. So I'm aware of my shadow.
And that's the key, but is the awareness
to have
which
awareness.
We're going to focus on. It is the awareness
to have
which
awareness.
We're going to focus on in a second. Nare, good morning.
Yes, how are you, Eusebio?
Extremely well. Long time. Welcome.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, my brother. Yeah, I just want to say love is a feeling, you know, but there are two different things between love and a relationship. So a lot of people, when they enter into a relationship, they confuse it with their love because they end up having some expectation. You know, you got your partner, you end up expecting your partner to be your ATM, you're expecting your partner to be your doctor. Those things, they got nothing to do with love. Love is just a feeling, you know. So
that is stunning.
It's a different thing.
That is interesting. And there's a psychological question there. There's also a philosophical one. Mm-hmm. Louisa also has a background in philosophy. We're going to take news headlines break, but I want us to deal with Nare's observation before we take Musa and Michael's call, because if love has an affective component, a feeling, are we wrong to want that feeling to last in a relationship? And how do we make the relationship work long after that feeling is no longer there, or it comes and it goes?
702 and Cape Talk.
Talking Sex. What do you make of Nare's observation that love is a feeling and in relationships we should have different expectations?
I wonder about that because I don't think the two can be unlinked. I mean, you are in love, and if you are in love, then supposedly you're in a relationship. I don't know how you can separate them. I was curious about his remark that people expected him to be an ATM. That was really interesting. I just wondered whether him and his significant other would have to negotiate finances. Maybe that was an area where he was feeling particularly resentful.
The nuts and bolts of a relationship, making it work, does it have to kill that affective component?
No.
Because I think that's what he set up there unintentionally, right? It's like the details, the dreariness of a relationship.
Yeah.
All that practicality is, where are we going to live? What car are we going to buy? What are we going to invest in? Which holiday are we going to have? And some of it is really like dull, but
that's the difference between a fling and a long-term relationship.
Mm.
You can have fabulous fun for a short time with somebody and then move on.
Mm, go your separate ways.
But then you have to be overt, and then that's what you want.
Mm.
If he's not looking for the humdrum of a long-term relationship with its highs and lows, well, then maybe he should stick to the fun stuff.
Someone on Twitter wanted to know from you, what is the difference between love and infatuation, and how do I know which of the two I'm experiencing?
I think when we're infatuated, we have all of these chemicals firing off in our brain, oxytocin, all of these mad, wonderful hormones that don't allow us to see reality. And once that reality sets in, then you're able to clearly see, is this infatuation or is there something deeper than this? Is there love? They say love has to be blind, otherwise you wouldn't meet anyone.
Put differently, if you love Eusebius's morning breath, then it wasn't infatuation the night before. Musa, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very good, Musa. What has this conversation done with you? Has it also drawn threads for you with childhood?
It did. It did. In a way that, in fact, it was triggered by the young lady that just called. I think she said she's 21. That she's angry, and sometimes she's got outbursts of anger.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know how to control it. It was, I think, at that time that I got reminded of my own childhood. I grew up not knowing my parents. Let me just start there. Got introduced to my dad at the age of 22, to my mom when I was 10. And during that whole time, I figured that I'd been bullied, but I just didn't know. I thought that maybe it's just I was growing up, like, you know, when you get beaten, and even among your peers when you get beaten, up until a time that I realized that I think I must have been 13, 14, and I realized that, okay, now it's getting out of hand because I got myself into fights all the time. At that time, I already knew my mom and I'd met my siblings, but still I could not just relate to people the way a normal child would. There came a point when I joined a martial arts class, and I was a very active kid. And when I got there, it's through obviously the physical involvement in martial art, but also then there is the mental part of it. I had a very good master that would sit us down one by one, and he would ask about our upbringing. In my case, he picked up that my anger came from the fact that I did not know my parents. And he helped me direct and channel my anger towards the tasks that would be given to us. So for me, it was more, if it was physical pain that I had to feel, I mean, sometimes we'd have to be asked to walk on tar road for about 5 kilometers on a very hot day, and tar is very, very, it's burning. And we'd have to walk on foot, and we have to bear that kind of pain. Coming back, he would sit us down, and he would tell us, because I think because he knew us, he would call us in one by one. And then he would ask about what you told him about your upbringing. And then he would ask, how do you feel now about that? And obviously, sometimes you'd be honest. Sometimes you didn't know what to say. But up until I had to figure out myself that, in fact, in order for me to get rid of the pain, I need to look into it, into myself, and actually accept the fact that I'm not like any other kid. I did not have parents. I mean, I did not get hugs and kisses at the age of 4. Like, I was not. I don't remember myself sitting on the lap of my mom, that kind of a thing.
But Musa, you know what it sounds like to me? This is such a wonderful, wonderful story, because your martial arts teacher stepped in as a surrogate father and provided an alternate family environment for you. And I'm why I used the example of martial arts with Mara Khan earlier on is that I've done martial arts myself, and I'm very familiar with the soft form and the hard form that we do, and how it can change parts of you that you didn't even think were able to be changed.
Musa, what has that in turn done for your ability to love as an adult and to form relationships, to even approach potential partners, perhaps in ways that might otherwise have been very hard if this diversion process of a child that was at risk had not been embarked on so fortuitously? What has it done? Are you in a relationship? Do you form them easily? How do you behave in them?
I am. Let me just start with the difficulty of it at first. So obviously, I was an attention-seeking teenager or young adult. So every time I would get into a relationship, I would expect that, for instance, on my birthday, if my partner forgets that it's my birthday, it would be a fight leading to a breakup, because it's the attention, because I never had it. I never had it. So for a person that says they love me, so it's unbelievable for them to say, I forgot.
And so they're often bewildered why you have this reaction, but for you it's so important.
Exactly. And then also growing up, I think because of the lessons that I learned in martial art, that I had to, every time something wrong happens, I had to look into myself as to why is this happening. So the awareness has grown to the extent that every time now I see something wrong happening in any relationship with my siblings, with friends, with colleagues, or even with clients, I get to the point of calming down and look into what is it that probably is within me. Maybe I might say something and not meaning to harm a person, but because I'm always I always have my guns to protect myself.
Musa, we're going to leave that there because we want to get to other calls as well, and I'm mindful of the time. But I want to thank you for sharing your story with us in such detail as well. And I would assume, Louisa, that he's having a very lucid moment stepping back from his own life, but it is also not a linear process, so you've got to be gentle with yourself. I'm sure there are good days and bad days.
Yeah.
He might find himself lashing out this afternoon.
Sure, but I'm amazed at Musa's resilience, and this is what I want people to know, is that with self-awareness, a lot of things are possible. And he now has developed resilience, self-awareness, and it sounds like he's moving through.
Cindy, good morning.
Hello.
Welcome to the show, Cindy. Good morning.
Yes, sorry, I didn't hear the surname of your guest, but I heard the first name. Is it Louisa?
Yes, Louisa, hello.
Good morning. I'm going to address you in your first name.
Of course you can.
Here's my situation.
Tell me.
Honestly, even now at my age, I'm not going to disclose my age.
No,
I don't have a partner.
Okay.
I don't have a partner that I can go to my family and say, this is so-and-so, I'm dating full-time, you know, because of my personality. However, I have possessive love, I am loving, but I have been beaten a number of times. So I don't trust anybody except me.
Sure.
The gentleman that just spoke before me and the younger lady that spoke before him, I identify with their situations because I've got kids, and these kids are more or less within the same age range as the 21-year-old. I'm not going to mention their age per se. I'm a helicopter mother, as in I'm domineering in my mothering skills because I'm a single parent. But I've learned to survive in the street because of what I went through. I was married 20 years ago. Unfortunately, I'm not married now. I'll not tell you why it is I'm not married, because of obvious reasons. So I'm unable, honestly, because of my controversial nature, because of my outspokenness, because of me.
Okay, Cindy.
Okay, Cindy, I think we get the gist of it. So how does Cindy not lose her authenticity but also find love?
So I want to ask Cindy a few questions. Cindy, did you experience this in your family of origin? Did you experience this type of abuse at home?
Oh, I was never, you were never abused, except my father was very, very strict.
Okay.
In that it will be interpreted as being abusive kind of fathering.
Okay.
But no. Oh, then it was never abusive, but now it will be considered abusive.
Okay. So for you, you've carried the memory of strictness and of control into your life, and you've had, unfortunately, some very difficult relationships. You've described yourself as a helicopter parent. You've described the control that you need to have. It also sounds to me like you have decided that who you are now is unacceptable to meet a partner. This is something that you've made a decision about.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more.
Okay. So what parts of that control and what parts of that strictness could be seen as positives?
I'm going to respond in a very, I don't know, by the way sort of way.
No, yeah, you have to give me one word.
Okay. No, I'm not going to do that. You gave the other gentleman 20 minutes.
No. You know why? I want the truth.
No, Cindy, I don't think.
No,
hold on, Cindy, 1 second.
We won't cut you, man.
Hold on 1 second. Louisa's not trying to restrict you in terms of time. There's method. Just trust my therapist. There's a reason she doesn't want you to go on the buy. Just answer straight.
Yeah. Okay, answer you straight. Okay, what was the question?
The question was, with your elements of strictness and control, from those two elements, what could you see as a positive? Deriving from strictness.
Positive.
Yes, for you. Yeah. Deriving as a positive from strictness and control.
Okay. I couldn't, in the life of me, interpret that as a positive. Wow. Because it has impacted negatively in my love, you know, my relationship with a man. So I wouldn't call it positive.
Okay.
To an extent that because of my being bipolar, I've done things to good people, to good men out there. And therefore, I cannot necessarily apportion blame solely on to them.
No, sure. What I would say to you, though, is somebody who has elements of control and who can be quite strict would also be able to have firm boundaries. So going forward in relationships, you probably are very aware of what you do like and what you don't like.
We've lost Cindy there, unfortunately.
Oh.
But I really think that's, her answer has me gobsmacked because it's such a key part of who she is. And for the success criterion to only be whether I can hold on to a man, she needs to learn to love herself just because she's Cindy.
Because she found it very difficult to find any parts of her that were acceptable.
And these traits are always double-sided.
And that's why we ask always the question, we are looking for the other to fill us up. We are looking for the magic queen, the magic knight to make it all right.
702 and Cape Talk.
Talking sex.
Our last caller, Michael, thank you so much for your patience. We've got about 3 minutes or so. Tell us your story or what it is that you'd like to ask. Thank you so much for holding on.
Yes, I'll be very quick. I have just one problem. I grew up, I would say old school, where maybe talking back to each other when you have problems I tend to have a loud voice, and then my partner also, when we arguing, and then she has this loud voice as well. I end up no longer concentrating, even if whether I'm wrong, concluding that maybe she's disrespecting me. With the tone of answering back in a loud and then I find aggressive and then all that, then I tend to shut down and completely no longer wanting to do everything regarding resolving the issue. So yeah,
that makes sense to me. Yeah. And many people will go through that. Louisa, what do you say to Michael?
Yeah, Michael, it sounds like there's communication issues at stake here. That the language that you're using to communicate with is at odds with each other, because the higher she raises her voice, the higher you raise your voice. And then eventually it comes to a point where neither of you are getting through to each other. So you back off and you back down and then you feel defeated. Correct?
Okay, we've lost Michael there. But I think Michael articulates what many of us go through. And I think the next installment, maybe we can talk about what tools can we learn to develop to form new habits in our relationships?
And effective communication.
Yes, because I don't know, for me the takeaways from this beautiful conversation is that on the one hand, many of us haven't reckoned with our childhoods and our past. So that's one insight I take from you, Louisa, and your engagement with the callers. And then there's the other bit, which is just as important. It's not less important because it's less philosophical. It is actually then, how can I behave differently right now?
And how can I change? Even if you're in a marriage or a relationship that's working for you, but there are some niggles, how to navigate those? And it always comes back to self-awareness. What do you do? And Michael was very articulate. He knew what he did. He knew what his wife did. But it had just reached this crescendo where they outmaneuver each other.
Absolutely. And then no one wins.
No one wins. But there can be a different methodology at play in that maybe they don't argue. Maybe they write notes to each other.
Can we do a show on that?
Yeah, let's do it.
On the actual practical things.
The practical things.
Because the self-awareness needs to be there. If you have the luxury to go to therapy, please go to therapy. And let's get over this business of shunning therapy as something for elites. But then there's practical things one can do differently. And that's work to be done there. Yeah. It's continuous.
And sometimes they can just be really simple things.
Absolutely.
Like just not walking into an old familiar argument.
Absolutely. Asking questions, changing your tone. We'll go through all of that.
Yeah.
We'll put together a little toolkit.
Yeah, let's do it.
If you want to get a hold of Louisa, you can email her, louisa@louisanios.com. louisa@louisanios.com. We're going to end with another song that is a very lyrical take on love. This one is more a case of Ubuntu and love, because this man loved so many different people. But fortunately for each of them, he loved them from the bottom of his pencil case.
I love you from the bottom of my pencil case. I love you.